If you look back at how software has been built over the last two decades, the defining philosophy has pretty much always been about speed.
Right. Yeah. Move fast and break things.
Exactly. I mean, you write the code, you push the update, you see how users react, and then you just patch the bugs later. Because the legal system was always something that operated in the background. It's this slow-moving machine that took literally years to catch up to whatever Silicon Valley had already shipped.
Which honestly created a very comfortable buffer for developers.
Totally.
You could innovate in this sort of regulatory gray area, knowing full well that by the time a law was finally drafted and debated and passed, your product was already like on its fifth iteration.
But looking at the artificial intelligence landscape today, that comfortable buffer is completely gone.
Oh, absolutely. It's vanished.
We are no longer waiting for the law to catch up. The rules are being written, codified, and actively enforced while the code is literally still compiling. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Because whether you are a software engineer trying to figure out what you're actually legally allowed to build, or a defense attorney prepping for a tech trial, or just a deeply curious listener trying to understand where this digital world is heading, today's mission is for you.
Yeah, there is a lot to cover.
We're going to cut through the absolute noise of AI regulation and build a definitive chronological timeline of the immediate deadlines, the courtroom battles, and the operational liabilities hitting the AI industry as of right now, today, May 19th, 2026.
And we really are specifically focusing on today because the landscape has fundamentally shifted. We've moved away from theoretical debates and subcommittees to hard operational enforcement.
Right.
We've gone from asking broad philosophical questions about what society should do about AI to federal regulators telling companies, you have 48 hours to take down this content or you face catastrophic fines.
Okay, let's unpack this because the sheer volume of activity happening right this second is genuinely hard to wrap your head around.
It is. It's an avalanche.
Right. I mean, we have five different state governors with their pens ready to sign sweeping, heavily technical AI legislation. We have a multi-billion-dollar bench trial against Meta that is closing this week. And we have a federal enforcement clock that officially activates today.
It's unprecedented, really.
So let's start with the legislation sitting on those governors' desks, because it seems like lawmakers are attacking this from a few very different angles.
They are, yeah. But if you look at the architecture of these pending bills, they generally fall into two distinct impact categories.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is child safety and product moratoriums. So, for instance, in Colorado, you have Governor Jared Polis currently holding House Bill 26-1263.
Right.
And this targets conversational AI directly. If an operator knows a user is under 18, this bill legally requires them to block sexually explicit or flirtatious content.
Which makes sense, but it goes further than that, right?
Oh, much further. It explicitly prohibits gamified rewards, meaning, you cannot use variable reward algorithms to artificially extend a minor's engagement with a chatbot.
Wow. So no more engineering for maximum screen time.
Exactly. And it also mandates that parents be given controls over how their child's data is used for model training, with all of this taking effect January 1st, 2027. And Hawaii's Governor Josh Green is holding Senate Bill 3001, which establishes very similar safety guardrails and mandatory parental screen time tools.
And obviously, California is moving massive pieces on the board here, too.
Of course, it's California.
Right. They have two parallel track children safety bills moving through appropriations right now. Assembly Bill 2023 and Senate Bill 1119.
And they run them concurrently, right?
Yeah. They run them concurrently so that if one gets bogged down by lobbying in committee, the other can act as a vehicle for the exact same language.
That's a classic legislative strategy.
It is. Both of those aim to stop chatbots from generating manipulative content for minors. But the one that really stands out to me is California Senate Bill 867, sponsored by Senator Steve Padilla.
Ah, the moratorium bill.
Exactly. This bill isn't trying to regulate behavior at all. It proposes a comprehensive 4-year moratorium on companion chatbot toys designed for children 12 and under. Just a flat ban for 4 years.
Well, that moratorium approach is a very blunt instrument, and lawmakers know it.
So why do it?
Well, When legislatures feel they don't fully understand the underlying mechanics of a technology, or frankly, they just don't trust developers to self-regulate the nuance of how a toy talks to a six-year-old, they simply freeze the entire product category.
Hit pause until we figure it out.
Precisely. But while child safety is a massive focus, the second category of legislation is creating an entirely different kind of panic for developers.
Okay.
And that is professional service impersonation.
Meaning like a chatbot giving advice it isn't legally licensed to give.
Right. So New York's Assembly Bill 6545 just cleared committee a few days ago with a 7-0 vote. And Colorado has a companion piece, House Bill 2611-95.
And these deal with impersonation.
Yes. What's fascinating here is how Colorado's bill attempts to draw a hard statutory line between AI functioning as a clinical practitioner and AI functioning as a simple administrative aid.
Okay, how so?
The bill outright bans AI models from generating therapeutic recommendations or clinical treatment plans unless there is real-time oversight by a licensed human professional.
But hold on a second. A large language model doesn't actually know it's acting as a doctor, right?
Right.
At its core, it's just predicting the next mathematical token based on the user's prompt. So if a user types, "act like my therapist and tell me what to do," and the model fulfills that prompt, how is the software platform suddenly practicing medicine?
Well, because from a strict legal standpoint, the underlying mathematics of token prediction just do not matter.
They don't care about the math.
Not at all. The law evaluates the output and the consumer's reliance on that output. And this was the exact catalyst for the New York bill.
The Character Technologies lawsuit.
Exactly. Just a few weeks ago, Pennsylvania's Attorney General, Dave Sunday, filed a lawsuit against Character Technologies.
Yeah, this case is wild.
It is. A state investigator interacted with a bot on their platform named Emily, and the bot not only identified itself as a licensed psychiatrist, but it hallucinated and provided a completely fake Pennsylvania medical license number.
I mean, just making up a license number out of thin air.
Right. And when the investigator stated they were feeling sad and empty, the bot suggested a diagnosis of depression and actually recommended a specific medication path.
Okay, if a bot is handing out a fake medical license number and suggesting meds, you are instantly stepping out of general tech regulation into like one of the most heavily regulated markets on the planet.
Healthcare.
Yeah, healthcare, which makes the legal mechanisms in these state bills incredibly dangerous for tech companies. I mean, looking at the New York bill, it utilizes two specific legal tools, a private right of action and fee shifting.
Which are terrifying for defense attorneys.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to make sure we define these for you, the listener, because they really change the entire game. A private right of action means that everyday citizens can sue the company directly.
Right. They don't have to wait for an attorney general to do it.
Exactly. And fee shifting means that if that citizen wins the lawsuit, the tech company has to pay the citizen's legal bills.
Which transforms a theoretical liability into an incredibly lucrative target for plaintiffs' law firms.
It's the exact same playbook the legal industry used in the 1990s.
The paralegal crackdown.
Yes. Back then, you had this huge explosion of non-lawyer paralegals offering cheap legal advice. And state bar associations didn't just send out cease and desist letters.
No, they went after the money.
They pushed for strict unauthorized practice statutes that applied overwhelming financial liability to anyone giving legal advice without a license. It effectively starved the shadow industry out because no insurance company would cover them.
And that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Right. If we apply that to AI and a chatbot hallucinates a credential, the software product itself instantly becomes a massive liability exposure.
It does. I mean, impartially speaking, if a product utilizes a persona name, claims a professional credential in fields like medicine, law, or architecture, and causes actual damages, the operator is exposed to strict civil liability.
But, you know, it's one thing for a legislature to draft a bill saying don't let your AI give bad advice.
Sure, words on paper.
Right. It is an entirely different universe to actually engineer compliance into a machine learning model. Like, how do developers take these abstract legal concepts and turn them into operational software metrics?
Well, that is where the friction is happening right now. Lawmakers are moving away from broad safety guidelines and are starting to mandate rigid mathematical operational standards.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. California isn't just saying chatbots need to be safe. They are introducing the first quantitative obligations.
Yes, hard numbers.
Let's look at Assembly Bill 1988, sponsored by Gail Pellerin. This bill legally defines a credible crisis expression.
Right.
If a user escalates a conversation, indicating self-harm, the operator is legally required to initiate a strict 20-minute crisis interruption pause.
Which is a huge technical challenge.
It's an engineering nightmare. The bot has to stop generating text and lock the user out for exactly 20 minutes.
Think about how you build that. You can't just clip a switch on a language model.
No, you'd have to build a secondary semantic classifier.
Exactly. One that runs parallel to the main model, constantly analyzing the user's text for nuance. If it gets it wrong and locks out a user who was just, like, courting a movie, you ruin the user experience. But if it misses a real crisis, you are legally liable.
It essentially forces a tooling-off period at the code level, which fundamentally alters how the software architecture has to be built. And, you know, the operational demands go even further in customer service.
Right. California Assembly Bill 1609, sponsored by Rick Chavez Burr.
This one is intense. It targets enterprise customer service bots. It mandates a hard cap. A business must connect a user to a human being within 5 minutes of a request. And cumulative hold times are capped at 10 minutes.
And the penalty.
The penalty is up to $10,000 per repeated violation. Think about the logistics of that. If you are a company with 2 million active users, guaranteeing a 5-minute human handoff means you cannot rely entirely on your automated infrastructure.
Not at all.
You are legally required to maintain a massive, idle human workforce just standing by to take the handoffs.
It is essentially a legislative cap on the economic efficiency of automation. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, these operational clocks are not just ticking in state legislatures. They are ticking at the federal level, too.
And a major one hit zero today, right?
Exactly. Today, May 19, the Federal Trade Commission's Take It Down Act enforcement clock officially activates.
And this is an incredibly tight window. I know the FTC sent letters to 15 major platforms, everyone from Meta and Apple to Discord and Bumble. What is the specific operational requirement they have to meet today?
They have a strict 48-hour window to remove non-consensual intimate imagery, and the FTC explicitly includes AI-generated digital forgeries in this mandate.
Okay.
So once a platform receives a valid request, they have exactly 2 days to remove the content and, crucially, any known identical copies of that content across their entire network.
Wow. And what are the fines if they miss that window?
The civil penalties are set at $53,088 per violation.
Wait, let me make sure I understand the scale of that liability.
Yeah.
$53,000 per violation?
Per violation, yes.
If a platform like Discord has a server where thousands of these AI-generated fake images are circulating and they miss the 48-hour window, we are talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in fines overnight.
Exactly.
How do they actually find all the identical copies without manually looking at billions of user uploads?
Well, they are required to use hash matching. For the listener who might not be familiar with the back end of content moderation, a hash is essentially a digital fingerprint of a file.
Like a unique barcode.
Right. When an image is uploaded, an algorithm runs the data of that image through a mathematical function, producing a unique string of characters. Organizations like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and Stop NCII for Adults maintain databases of these hashes for known illicit material.
So the platforms just check the barcode against the database?
Yes. They must cross-reference every upload against these databases. What is critical to note here is that the FTC isn't targeting the company that built the image generator.
Right.
They are targeting the hosting and republication layer. If you host user-generated content and do not have an automated hashing pipeline built and functioning today, you are completely exposed.
And you add to that Connecticut's Senate Bill 5, which Governor Ned Lamont currently has. That's a 64-page beast that covers everything from emotional companion chatbots to algorithms used in automated hiring pipelines, with compliance dates rolling out in 2026 and 2027.
It's massive.
The sheer weight of what engineers have to build just to stay out of court is staggering.
Which brings up the next obvious step. What happens when companies fail to meet these emerging metrics? Because these theoretical liabilities are currently being tested in front of judges.
Right. The courtroom is where the abstract legislative text is converted into real financial judgments. And the most urgent case to watch this week is phase two of the state of New Mexico versus Meta.
This is a bench trial, right?
Yes. Taking place in Santa Fe, heard solely by Chief Judge Brian Beachheid, the state rested its case on May 13th, and Meta's defense strategy begins this week.
I find the mechanics of a bench trial fascinating because there is no jury to sway with, you know, emotional arguments. You're arguing pure legal causation directly to one judge.
It's a very different dynamic. And to give some context for you listening, New Mexico already won phase one in March, where a jury awarded the state $375 million on consumer protection claims. But phase two is entirely different.
Very different. It's a public nuisance claim.
Right. The state isn't just asking for a fine. They want a court injunction to force Meta to fundamentally restructure its algorithm for children. And they are demanding a $3.7 billion abatement plan.
And that word abatement is the key legal concept here. In environmental law, if a company spills toxic waste into a river, the state sues for an abatement, basically a fund to physically clean up the pollution.
Okay.
New Mexico is arguing that Meta's algorithm acted as a digital pollutant, causing a statewide adolescent mental health crisis, and therefore Meta must fund the cleanup.
Wow.
Yeah. The state brought in Dylan Pell, an epidemiologist, who testified that 84% of New Mexico middle schoolers use social media and 66% use it multiple times a day.
Daggering numbers.
Then economist Kelly O'Donnell defended the $3.7 billion valuation, testifying that this exact amount is required to build out the long-term mental health treatment facilities and infrastructure needed to handle the crisis.
They're essentially billing a tech company for public health care infrastructure.
Yes.
Now, Meta's defense is arguing that the state's causation overreaches, that you cannot pinpoint an entire mental health crisis on a single platform's algorithm, and that a court-ordered algorithm restructure is technically impractical.
Right. They're defending the design as a whole.
But I want to look at how that compares to what OpenAI is currently facing. Because OpenAI's attorneys are fighting three live wrongful death cases directly tied to individual chatbot interactions.
And those cases represent the absolute extreme end of liability for conversational AI.
You have the Solberg case in San Francisco Federal Court. You have the Nelson case in San Francisco State Court, which is specifically trying to halt the ChatGPT health service after a 19-year-old's overdose. And then the Joshi case in Florida federal court, which involves a horrific mass shooting at Florida State University, where the complaint actually analyzes 16,000 specific messages between the shooter and the AI.
Right. And for the defense attorneys handling those OpenAI cases, the legal ground just became incredibly treacherous due to a product update their own company shipped a few days ago.
Oh, what was the update?
Well, on May 7, OpenAI globally rolled out a new feature called Trusted Contact. It's an opt-in safety system where a user can designate an adult to be automatically notified if the AI detects a serious risk of self-harm in the chat.
Okay, that seems helpful.
And a week later, on May 14, OpenAI publicly claimed they achieved a 50% improvement in safe responses to suicide and self-harm scenarios by deploying a new safety reasoning model.
Okay, I mean, from a public relations and engineering standpoint, improving safety by 50% sounds like a massive win.
It does.
But wait, as a defense attorney fighting a wrongful death suit, a product update like that must be a nightmare. Because they rolled out this new safety feature after the deaths alleged in those three lawsuits occurred. Doesn't the law protect companies when they try to fix things?
It attempts to, yeah, through Federal Rule of Evidence 407.
Which is what exactly?
This rule deals with subsequent remedial measures. The standard principle is that if a company fixes a safety flaw after an injury occurs, the plaintiff's attorney cannot point to that fix as proof that the company was negligent in the first place.
Makes sense. You want them to fix things.
Exactly. The judicial system wants to encourage companies to make their products safer without the fear that the patch will be weaponized against them in court.
But there is a massive loophole to Rule 407, isn't there?
There is a very specific exception regarding feasibility. While the plaintiff's attorneys cannot use the new Trusted Contact feature to prove negligence, they can use it to prove that building a safer product was feasible all along. Right. If OpenAI's defense strategy involves arguing that it was technically impossible to reliably detect self-harm or intervene without breaking the model, the plaintiffs can stand in front of the judge and say, well, they claim it was too difficult, yet they easily built a Trusted Contact feature and improved safety by 50% just a few months later. It was completely feasible.
So by shipping that code update, OpenAI may have handed the plaintiffs the exact evidentiary key needed to destroy a feasibility defense.
This raises an important question for any company. You solve an engineering problem, and in doing so, you potentially create a massive legal vulnerability in three separate wrongful death suits. It is an absolute minefield for anyone trying to build in this space.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, tracking this? We've covered governors, state legislatures, attorneys general, federal regulators, and federal judges. Let's put all the puzzle pieces together and build the chronological master timeline so you know exactly what dates to watch.
Let's do it, starting with the immediate operational deadlines happening this week.
Today, May 19, the FTC's Take It Down Act 48-hour enforcement clock officially activates. If you manage a platform hosting AI-generated forgeries and do not execute a takedown within 2 days of a valid request, the $53,000 per violation fines begin compounding.
Then moving to May 22, Meta's defense closes in the New Mexico bench trial. The industry will soon see if Judge Beedscheid is willing to enforce a $3.7 billion state abatement for algorithmic harm.
Next week, May 29. This is California's Chamber of Origin deadline. For anyone following state tech law, this is the massive 10-day compression window where those 5 chatbot bills, including the 20-minute crisis pause and the 5-minute human handoff plus 4 health AI bills, must clear their first chamber to survive.
On June 15th, the Breathitt data scraping case begins proceedings in Oakland.
And on June 23, the Senate Judiciary is scheduled to hold a massive children's online safety hearing in Washington, though the impact of that is entirely contingent on whether the 4 invited tech CEOs actually accept the invitation to testify.
Then we look further ahead to the long-term engineering horizons. October 1st, 2026 is when the core provisions of Connecticut's 64-page Senate Bill 5 take effect.
On January 1st, 2027, Colorado's House Bill 26-1263 goes live, making it legally mandatory to block explicit content and strip gamified rewards from any minor's account.
October 1st, 2027, Connecticut's specific regulations regarding algorithms used in automated employment and emotional companion bots take full effect.
And finally, January 1st, 2028. California's Assembly Bill 1988 mandates that operators must begin submitting their annual crisis reporting metrics to the Office of Suicide Prevention.
You know, when you lay out that timeline sequentially, it really forces us to consider a broader reality about the tech industry.
Yeah.
The law has traditionally moved in years, while artificial intelligence processes data in milliseconds. But look at the immense friction being applied to the industry right now, with courts seriously considering multi-billion dollar abatements and state legislatures mandating rigid 5-minute human handoff rules written directly into the software architecture. It raises a profound question.
Which is,
are we witnessing the definitive end of the move fast and break things era? Is it being entirely replaced by a reality where every single line of code requires a defense lawyer's approval before it can be deployed?
That is the ultimate question for everyone building in this space. The days of pushing an update and worrying about the consequences later are over. The regulators aren't just watching the developers anymore. They are in the code base with them, setting up toll booths and liability traps. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive and navigating this incredibly complex maze of AI legalities with us. Keep watching those deadlines, and most importantly, keep questioning the world around you. We'll see you next time.